Hello, everybody. I want to welcome you to our class on anxiety and dealing with anxiety during coronavirus, during this global pandemic. I know we've got a bunch of folks on live right now and people that are going to be listening to the recording. Before we get started, I want to suggest that you have a pen and a paper, something to write on. I'm going to be inviting you to do a bunch of self-reflection today, and it might be good to have stuff written down that you've thought about or that maybe you discover. And think about what you might do in your space right now to create a little bit more containment or more of a possibility for you to drop into a process together. So I'll give you a moment to do that. And if you're new to the technology, there's a chat function at the bottom bar, and there's a Q&A box. So I do try to pause and take questions. It's great to put your questions in the Q&A box because then they live in one place. And you can use the chat function to make any comments you might want to make, either for the whole group to share or for me. And I'll periodically check the chat. My goal is for those of you that are on live is to make this as interactive as possible. And for those of you listening to also hopefully in the interactions, hear some of your questions reflected or some of your sentiments reflected so that I'm not just sitting here lecturing at you, but there is a little bit of dialogue happening. So you can use that bottom chat to chat to everybody. So I'm just going to chat to you. Hello. You can maybe see that come up. And I'm just scanning the names here and seeing some familiar names. I hate not being able to see your faces, but in this webinar format, it's not available. So let's begin. Hello, everybody. So I'm going to invite you to just start by doing a check-in. I want to know what we're beginning with this morning, so or this afternoon, based on when you're listening to this. I want you to take a moment first to look around the space that you're in and take in your environment. This is called orienting. I know most of us are at home right now, so don't look at all the things you want to rearrange or fix. Just notice colors or textures and move your head when you do this. Just take in your environment. Some of you might notice that when you do this, you take a spontaneous deep breath. Some of you might not, and that's fine too. But these are some of the tools I'm going to be teaching you, and not all the tools work for everybody. So orienting to your space visually for some people is settling. So just notice in your own body what that's like. And then when you feel sufficiently externally oriented, I want you to go inside. We're going to check in with how we're doing in this moment. So you can close your eyes if you like, or keep your eyes open or soften your gaze. And take a moment to scan your inner environment. Notice what sensations you feel in your body, if anything, or if there's lack of sensation. Notice what your breathing is like. Notice if there's a particular impulse, like I put my hand on my solar plexus. That was my impulse without even thinking about it. Was there something you did physically? And just notice what that's like. One of the things I hope to reveal to you today is that we're all trying to self-regulate. We're all trying to figure out how to feel okay, especially at this time. And there may be things you're already doing that really support you. And then there might be things that are not supporting you that you think are. So just notice what that's like. Like for me, when I put my hand here, it kind of settles me. I did that automatically. Notice sensations, what your breathing is like, and also if there's any particular emotions present right now. And in a moment, I'm going to invite you, those of you that are on live, to share in the chat, three words that describes how you feel in this moment. You can also write this down on your paper, those of you listening to the recording. Three words that describe how you're feeling. And folks that are on live, you don't have to share, obviously, in the chat. You can share privately with me or to the whole group. I will not name names, but I kind of want to have a sense of where folks are at in this moment. So when you're ready, typing into the chat or journaling, three words that describe how you feel in this moment. And to the best that you can, let go of any judgment about that. And it might be, I don't know how I feel. And even notice what it's like to name how you're feeling, if that's activating, if it gets you more anxious, or if it's settling. So we've got tight, fearful, and numb. Crampy, fear, dysregulated. Sluggish, distracted, confused. Tired, overwhelmed, peaceful. Curious, anticipation, sore. Apathetic, sleepy, not focused. Curious, scattered, distracted, tense but tired. So see if any of those words resonated for you. And then just notice how it feels to have named how what's going on for you, even if what's going on is unpleasant. And then, especially if you're feeling a lot of unpleasant stuff, ask yourself, can I be with this right now? And just notice what the answer is from your body. Sometimes the answer is a clear no, this is too much. Sometimes the answer might be like, yeah, it sucks, but I can be with it. And then notice what that's like, to just have that be the question, can I be with this right now? All right, now we're going to move into resourcing. And don't worry, I'm going to explain all of this later in a moment, but I want to give you a little experience so that when I give you the concepts and I feed your neocortex, you've maybe experienced it in your body a little bit. Now we're going to try to find some grounding in the body. Grounding is about finding anything that feels solid or supportive or even good. Okay, so grounding can happen through the parts of the body touching the earth, maybe through the sit bones or the legs or your feet. Look for that right now. Do you feel grounded? And maybe the answer is like, heck no, I'm like floating all over the place right now, or I feel fragmented. So if that's true, we want to try to deliberately look for that grounding. We're going to do a grounding through the hands. Take your hands, and I want you to squeeze up and down your arms a little bit. And track your body. If you settle a little bit or you take a spontaneous breath, that lets you know, this tool works for me. These are super overwhelming times for so many people, and giving ourselves a little physical containment can be a useful grounding tool. You can also ground a little bit by having hands on the body. It's about finding something that feels solid or containing. So I want you to imagine that in this workshop, you're going to be given a sampler of lots of different things to try. And my hope is that when you walk away, you've picked up a few things that work for you. Okay? Not all of them will work for you. So see if there's anything that feels solid in your body. It might be the pressure of your hands. It might be planting your feet on the floor and pushing the feet down. And if the answer is no, that's cool. We're just trying to get curious about what we're beginning with today, so that when we move into the information, you have a sense of what you're working with inside yourself. And then the next one is going to be breath. I want you to explore deepening your breath right now. And after you've tried to deepen the breath a little bit, if you notice that trying to deepen the breath kicks up your anxiety, let go of trying to control your breath. That's not going to be a useful tool for you right now. Okay, if that's true for you, let your breath be exactly as it is. Some of you will notice that in deepening the breath, that allows you to settle. So again, take note for yourself. And if you're working with breath, we want to try to breathe through the nose. And we want to try to do breathing that is, you can think of it as belly breathing or breathing into the lower part of the lungs. And so you can put your hands on your lower ribs. And as you inhale, imagine filling your hands with breath. So we don't want the breathing to be all the way up here. You can imagine letting the belly expand and then come back in. So just try this a few times. Notice if this works for you. Good, and then release. I'm gonna show you a lot more techniques, but I wanna give you some information first. If any of those particularly worked for you and you wanna type it into the chat, one thing that worked for you, feel free. That can help me know what's working for folks. I've been doing this work for almost 15 years now, so I also have a general sense of when I'm doing this with groups, usually, you know, about half the group grounding really works, about another half breathing works. For some folks, neither of those work, and I have a bunch of other things I'm gonna share with you. But I have a little bit of experience with knowing, you know, the spectrum of tools that can support people, okay? Yeah, somebody's saying that the massaging of the arms was really containing. Yeah, for me, that really helps because the way that I experience anxiety in my body is that it can be overwhelming and I feel like I have way too much energy and I don't know what to do with it. And containment really helps. Again, for some of you, that'll be true. For others, that might not be true. This group really liked the arms. Good. And asking if things are okay. This is a really important one. I do this often with folks that are experiencing trauma symptoms or panic. Sometimes we assume we can't handle something and we go into a panic response. But when we actually reflect, it's like, oh, okay, this is okay. I remember when I was struggling with anxiety more seriously, I developed a fear of flying. Before flying, I would get very activated and my heart would start to race. And I started just asking myself, like, can I tolerate this as a sensation? And just that question really helped me start to work on and change my fear of flying, because I realized, okay, I can be on a plane and have my heart rate be a little higher. That's actually tolerable. And I was able to make those distinctions for myself, and that helped. All right, so let's dive into some information. Wanted to give you a little bit of grounding before we started. So what we're gonna do today is I wanna give you a basic physiology of how stress impacts us so that you can feel empowered to use some of the tools that I'm giving you with that knowledge. For a lot of us, understanding some of the basics of how stress and anxiety impact the nervous system can be very empowering. This is a time of a global traumatic event. This global pandemic is causing everybody on the planet to feel stressed in different ways. It impacts everybody, but it impacts us differently. And it's important to not assume that everybody is experiencing the stress and the anxiety of this COVID-19 scare in the same way. Some of us are coming into this with already a predisposition to feel anxious or mental health issues that are overwhelming. So we're entering into this already in overwhelm. And for some folks, it just is pulling them into even more overwhelm. But ironically, for others, they're kind of like, I know this. It's like, it's not new. And so some folks are feeling like, I know I've been dealing with overwhelm my whole life. Welcome other people to the party of what it feels like to feel like there's things we can't control. And so both are true for folks. For some people, this is new. It's new to be feeling afraid in this way. And then everybody's circumstances are different. Some people are really dealing with economic fears. Some people are grappling with health issues or fear for loved ones. Some people are able to have a safe place to quarantine, and others might be in unsafe places where they're stuck. So I don't want to make assumptions about the dynamics of my listeners here. I just want to acknowledge circumstances are really different for different people. Some of us have the privilege to be quarantined in a safe place or in a beautiful place, and others are in unsafe situations on top of everything else that's going on. And then, of course, we've got our essential workers who are having to go out every day and face the trauma of other people and their own exposures. So I want you to just be aware of what your own circumstance is. And yeah, I always think it's important for us to acknowledge that not everybody's having the same experience. So, you know, at this point, we're many of us are about 30 days into quarantine. Some people are more, some people are less. And I offered this webinar 2.5 weeks ago, when for a lot of people, it was sort of fresh. There was this feeling of like, oh my gosh, we can't believe this is happening. And I wanted to offer it again, because I think that now that we're 30 days in, for some people, there might be other layers being revealed. And it might be, there might be some different dynamics around how we're experiencing all that's going on. We're going to go a little deeper today than in the first webinar. We're going to go through the same tools, but we're going to dig in a little deeper. So the first thing, if we want to manage our anxiety, right, that's the theme of this, is managing our anxiety, is we have to know ourselves. We have to know, how does anxiety impact me? We got to know what we're working with, right? So if you're on this call, you're not in denial, you know you're feeling anxious, right? You know, I know folks who are like, I'm fine, I'm not anxious at all, but like they're drinking too much or they're doing behaviors that don't serve them because they don't want to acknowledge the overwhelm. And I get that, because it can feel overwhelming to acknowledge the overwhelm. But the truth is that, what's that saying? What we resist persists. If we don't acknowledge something, it can get stronger, because oftentimes these feelings want to be felt, need our attention, but we don't know how to do that. We don't have the tools, so we avoid. So my hope is that today you'll get some tools to do that. So I want to start by inviting you to reflect on a few questions for yourself. So this is where I want you to pull out your journals, or you know, you can just reflect in your own mind. But a few questions I want to ask you is, and you can type some of this into the chat if it helps to share. First is, for you, how does anxiety feel in your body? So I want you to write down sensation words. Does your heart race? Do you feel nauseous? Does your jaw get tight? Do you get a headache? Do you not feel your body? Do you just kind of float away and dissociate? Reflect on yourself. How does anxiety feel in your body? Does it have a temperature? Does it have a texture? So we might check in right now. You might be feeling it right now. And again, you can write it in your journal or you can share in the chat. I'll just give you a minute to do that. And as you're naming that, if it starts to get amplified, use some of the tools. Can you look around? Maybe do some arm squeezes. Maybe focus on your breath. And again, notice what it's like to write this down or say the words. So somebody is sharing that their tongue gets numb. Oh, that's a first for me to hear that's a normal. Interesting. Somebody is saying they're not breathing fully, hot, shaky legs. Yeah. And especially, you know, right now, the irony that this virus that's going around, some of the symptoms like not being able to breathe or pain in the chest are also anxiety symptoms. And so that's also really scary, right? So, you know, when you're struggling with anxiety and then suddenly there's also this like, oh my gosh, and am I getting sick, right? So the anxiety is going to amplify this experience for a lot of us. Tight chest, heart racing, want to run away, tight throat, hot. Yes. So now here's my next question. is how do you react to that feeling? So do you get scared? Do you try to control it? Do you get overwhelmed? Do you use substances or distraction? Don't judge yourself. We're just getting curious. So you have this feeling, and how do you react? You know, I know for me, sometimes what I do to react is I want to control my family. I want to, like, you know, clean the house or tell my kid he's doing too many video games. I tend to externalize and try to find external reasons for being anxious and external reasons I can control. So then I can do something to feel in control. So that's me. So notice for you, how do you react to those sensations? And again, you can type them into the chat or journal, write them. And again, if you notice that you're judging, don't. We're all doing it. You know, I always joke, like, we're all fucked up. You're not the only one, right? We're all trying to figure out how to feel good. And really, that's the basis of this workshop is, we've got to have compassion for the coping strategies we have. Even if they're not healthy coping strategies, they were at some point necessary, or at some point all we knew how to do. Okay. How do you react to the feeling of anxiety? Somebody saying it's true, controlling and judging myself that I'm not strong enough. Yeah. I have this voice that's like, you have no right. Other people have it worse. And that's true. I personally do feel very privileged. And if I react to my anxiety by minimizing it, I actually make it worse. So how do we have compassion for ourselves? And the more we can have that compassion for ourselves, the more we can extend it out to others. Somebody's saying they go numb, and they go numb to the feelings, and the mind races. Yes. Feeling like you should handle this, cry or make yourself a victim. Ooh, that's such a powerful one. I have that in my family lineage. We love to play the victim. We go into that victim archetype, and it's a very comfortable place. So whatever you're discovering, again, can you stay curious rather than judgmental? Okay, so the judgment will often stop the flow of our growth and of our healing. And then, you know, the last two reflections are, you know, what are some of your unhealthy coping mechanisms and what are some of your healthy ones? And again, so unhealthy coping mechanisms are ones that maybe have a negative side effect. So they might work in the moment, but then on the other side, you feel worse. And these can be like numbing coping mechanisms or, again, relational ones. If you are stuck with other people, you know, what starts to happen for a lot of us is now we're working all our shit out with like one or two other people, right? Before quarantine, we maybe could work it out with others. And then some of you are working, you're having to go out and work. And then you're in these higher stress situations with other people. So everything is getting amplified right now, but not just the bad, the good is getting amplified as well. And I really want us to not just look at the negatives. So what are some of the unhealthy things you might be noticing? And again, I really want to emphasize the relational stuff. You know, for those of us that might not struggle with, you know, addictive substances, maybe ours shows up in our relationships. And again, I know that's me. Like, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do any of that stuff. If I do any of that, like have a glass of wine once a week, I do it in total moderation because that's not my coping style. But I become a bitch. I mean, I do. And it's easy for me to be like, I don't have any addiction issues, but it'll show up in my relationships. For some of you, it's going to show up in addiction stuff. So again, try to reflect on that. Again, if you want to type them into the chat, feel free. Social media. Oh my God, that's such a tough one, right? Eating ice cream, sleeping, stress eating. Yes. And then again, what are you discovering for you are some healthy coping mechanisms? And maybe you're not doing it enough, but you know it's good for you. And again, I'm going to offer you a bunch, but I want you to reflect on what you're working with right now. You know, have you been able to exercise or even just like take a deep breath before you eat the ice cream, right? just the little things that we're doing to regulate ourselves. Yeah, getting out into nature, walking, hiking. Yes, illegal hiking, depending on where you are. Great, yoga breaks. Awesome. So hopefully at this point you have a little bit of a sense, or more of a sense, of like what you're working with. And this is a constant practice of like reflecting and then acting and then reflecting and then acting, okay? I'm seeing more coping things. Baking is so fun, helping others. Now I'm gonna invite you to go a little deeper, okay? A little deeper, which is, what deeper layers of fears are being revealed to you at this time? So think about like ancestral traumas or family of origin stuff, right? So like, I come from Lebanon. I come from a family that fled war. I come from a mom who was hoarding food and money and always prepared for a catastrophe, right? So it's in my, this stuff, I'm kind of like, I got this. I know how to like, you know, use the frozen food and stock up on food and, you know, shelter in place, because we had to do this. We were, you know, hidden in the basement while bombs were going off in Beirut. So there's a way where my ancestral resilience is coming up, not just the trauma, but also the trauma, hypervigilance, the fear, the mistrust. So, you know, now that we're a little deeper in, maybe you have some space to see what might be getting kicked up that's old. So just take a moment. And again, these might be questions you come back to later. If you're listening to the recording, you can always pause and take a little more time to answer these questions. What's getting kicked up that's old? And for this one, those of you that are on live, if you do want to share, it can help others who might feel a little stuck to know. And again, people did that, just again, you already had some mental health challenges, obsessive compulsive disorder or anxiety, that stuff might be just getting amplified. Let's see what folks are saying. Feeling like you're not strong enough to do this. Yeah, and even issues around self-esteem can come up, right? You know, for me, as somebody who tends to want to control my environment in order to control my anxiety, there is, again, a perk here because I get to be home. So I feel a little bit more contained. Like, okay, if I can just control the house, I've been cleaning ferociously, that helps me feel in control. But then when I take that too far and I don't actually admit that I feel anxious, like I said, I'm trying to control the people in my house, control myself and my feelings in a way that's not useful. So for me, my practice is to really let myself feel my grief and to feel what's going on rather than just be in that action part. And then there's some of you who are the opposite. You let go, you slow down. And you don't feel, and I'm going to break down what those are physiologically in a minute. Okay. Somebody said fear of poverty, fear my fiance won't love me because of my lack of money. All the drawers are clean and the closets are ordered. I'm with you. Both sides had death because of the Holocaust, and fled Europe. Then mom fled Argentina to avoid genocide by the government. Exactly. So how many of us have oppression, genocide in our ancestry, right? Some of that might get kicked up. And again, it's also our resilience. It's not just the trauma. And then as you're exploring this, also exploring if there's any old patterns of behavior emerging for you, right? Holocaust survivors. So notice how you're all feeling in your body as we're talking about this. And we're going to take a cuteness break. So here you are. I want you to look at these cute little animals and just track your body. Just taking a moment to take in different imagery. See if this is a resource for you. I've been trying to use cute imagery more as a resource for me. See if there's a particular image that warms your heart. I really like that puppy on the bottom right-hand corner. It looks like it's smiling. Or the turtle trying to give you a hug. So part of what I like to talk about in this work of how do we regulate our nervous systems at this time is this idea of titration. So we just talked about some intense stuff and we went into intensity and then we want to titrate it. We want to kind of back off a little bit and take a pause. Okay. I know that turtle's so cute. Oh, hi, Niloufer. This approach that I'm giving you is a very somatic approach. This is about understanding the workings of our nervous system and how the nervous system deals with stress and how different nervous systems deal with stress. So notice if this is a useful one for you, and if it is, there's a website called Cuteness Overload that you could use. Again, we don't want to get addicted to that either, but allowing ourselves breaks. And I just noticed in my body, I don't know if you saw this in the video, but I started to rock back and forth as I was looking at these images. And for me, movement, rhythmical movement, is a resource that allows my nervous system to feel settled. So check in with your own body. Did you automatically start to do something, or what would it be like if you just let yourself rock a little bit right now? See if that's resourcing for you. All right. So I'm going to pause just for a moment and see if there are any questions so far. I think I've caught most of your comments, but if there's any specific questions. So we're going to dive into the nervous system stuff, but this first 30 minutes was a little bit about taking stock for yourself so you know what you're working with. So just pausing. I want to pause for a moment, see if there's any questions. Hopefully this is landing so far. Okay. So let's talk about how our nervous system deals with stress. For today, I'm gonna give you a simple some simple concepts. And we're gonna end, by the way, with like a 10-minute embodied practice just seated to like go back through these tools and see what works in your own body. But we can think about the nervous system as like the electrical wiring in a building, okay? So we're running energy through our bodies. And when we're regulated, when we're self-regulated, we're able to be in a rhythm of, dealing with stress and then settling back down, right? A rhythm of like activation and settling. Activation and settling. I'm actually going to show you this image. And when the nervous system is regulated, we have a pretty broad window of tolerance. So I apologize, this slide is a little bit blurry, but the green zone is the zone of self-regulation. It means, you know what, life is bringing me things I can handle. I can get stressed about something, but then I return back to homeostasis and life feels like a flow, right? Some of you might have felt this way prior to this pandemic. Some of you weren't in that place prior to the pandemic. But ideally, when we're regulated, we feel like we can handle life. We feel resilient. We feel capable of dealing with difficulty. And we have this sense that what is brought to us is mostly stuff we can handle. So we don't get too caught up worrying about all the things we can't handle, okay? Then if life suddenly throws at us all this stuff we have to deal with. Again, and specifically right now, we're focusing on this pandemic, right? This is an overwhelm. We're in global overwhelm. And all of a sudden, you can imagine that you're being asked to handle a lot more energy than your nervous system can handle. So we deal with this. This can result in a couple of things, right? First of all, what this does is it moves us outside of our window of tolerance. We can't tolerate what's going on. And that can increase our arousal, okay? And when we have too much energy that we're dealing with, we become dysregulated. It's just too much. Now, this dysregulation shows up differently in different nervous systems. Okay. So for some of us, we are what I like to call on people. So on people, when we're dysregulated, when we're running too much energy, we're going to tend to be anxious. We'll get hypervigilant. We have high arousal. So for me, when I'm anxious, sounds seem too loud. I get startled really easily. Everything just feels like it's too much. We can be prone to panic attacks. We can be the kind of people who need to move. We're the ones cleaning out our drawers and cleaning every corner of the house potentially. But we also can become immobilized. We can have so much energy going on that we just kind of freeze, but it feels like a lot of energy. Notice if that's you. If you're an on person, notice if that's you. You can type it in. If I have on people, you can type in if you're on. Well, let me describe off, then you can tell me who you think you are. So off people are the opposite. You will tend towards depression or shutdown when you have too much energy that you have to run through your nervous system. You're the ones who could sleep all day. You can get lethargic or heavy or slow. You might dissociate, not feel anything. You become spacey. Now, some of you do both, okay? So the analogy I like to use, it's what I was starting to say before, is that it's like the electrical wiring in a building, okay? So imagine that if there's a sudden rush of electricity, of voltage, right? Either one of two things happens. Either there's an explosion, those are us on people, or the surge protectors turn everything off. And those are off people. Now, behind both presentations is too much energy. Okay, we're all being asked to run too much energy, and this is our response. So if you want to share in the chat if you're on or off, or if you do both. And I would imagine, yep, we've got a bunch of people who do both. Yep. And the other thing that I have found is kind of interesting is that we tend, if you're like, especially if you're like in partnership, we can, what I have learned is that we tend to be drawn to somebody who copes differently than we do. And so sometimes that can be very balancing, but sometimes it can cause some conflict. Okay, so like I'm super on person. I mean, I'll be up at, you know, midnight making spreadsheets and budgets and plans. And my husband is more of an off person. So when he's stressed, he's just like in his office watching a movie, like eating cookies. You know, he wants to shut down. I don't know how to shut down. I go. And so sometimes the way I am can get him to be more anxious because I'm like frenetic energy around him. And the way he is can make me more anxious because I like need him to do shit to feel better. And, you know, once I learned about this, we're both able to have more compassion for each other. Like I can understand that if he's stressed, he really just needs to like shut down and go inside. And I can honor that a little bit better knowing that. And he also can know that when I'm stressed, I need to do stuff to feel better. And so it can also be helpful if you are, you know, especially if you are in quarantine with other people who deal with stress differently, understanding this can be useful, okay? So noticing if you're on or on person. And so depending on how we deal with this anxiety, some tools work better for other people than others, okay? So we've got people who do both here, a lot of people who do both, but we've got both on and on folks here. Yeah. And so, you know, if you are, say, an on person, it's not your job to, like, figure out how to, like, sit and meditate all day. Use that energy, but also think about how you might use the energy and then figure out how to get more still. So for me as the on person, that's great. I get up and I will clean and empty the dishwasher and do all those things. But then after I've done those things, I make myself sit and pause. So I've gotten into the practice of having a coloring book on the coffee table and colored pencils. And I make myself, instead of my default being cleaning or micromanaging my family, when I don't need to be cleaning and when the family is fine, I try to not just go and answer emails or look at the news. I make myself sit and color. And it's been really therapeutic. Last night I was coloring and my 9-year-old comes over with a pen and he threatens to color over my coloring. And I was like, I'm coloring, get away from my coloring book. So even with the coloring, I brought a little bit of my on energy, but because I am a doer, right? Coloring is helpful because I get to do something. So us on people and again, for off people, you know, we can all learn from each other. We regulate, some of us, by turning chaos into order, right? So cleaning the house is like my biggest joy right now because it's something I can control, right? Coloring helps, is a way that I can creatively create order out of chaos. I have clients with, you know, pretty severe PTSD symptoms that two of them are artists, and by making art, they regulate their nervous systems because they're able to do something really tangible with their energy. So think about that. Think about what you might create that that can allow you to feel that sense of order in the small microcosm. I'm going to check in some questions here. Does anger or irritability land in the on category? I think it can, because irritable energy is like an activated energy. So that's a little bit more on. Depression would be more of the off, okay? Because that's more of a lack of energy. Somebody's saying, I have a hard time just being still and I'm an on person and I get frustrated that I can't relax. I know. Yes. So if we're on, sometimes what we need in order to be still is to move. So again, depending on your physical capacity, sometimes it's not physically, people don't have the, you know, there's injury or physical mobility issues. But for me, guess what I'm doing during this quarantine? I started running, but like twice a week for 20 minutes, nothing, you know, nothing big, but I need to move and then my nervous system settles. So for some of you, you might think about if it's safe in your body, how you might create movement or do physical practices that help you move that energy so that you can then settle. If you take an on person and we're running all this energy and you try to get us to sit still to meditate, guess what? Our anxiety might skyrocket, okay? Somebody's asking, how do you and your partner get along with having opposite nervous systems? Right, so first just understanding, right? And then I'm able to say things like, to my husband, where I'm like, you know what, I'm feeling really anxious and I'm noticing I want to feel in control of everything. I just name it and that helps him have compassion for me. And you know, he's able to like be more patient. Like, when this first started, I said to him, I'm like, I need us to have a schedule every day. Otherwise, I just don't know what to do with myself because I have to manage the kids and work and all this stuff. And at first I could see him get overwhelmed. Like, there's Hala, she needs to do all this stuff. But when I said to him, look, if I have a schedule, it'll give me some structure and I'll be way less annoying. And he was like, sign me up for the schedule. So we do a lot of communicating about what we need. He's able to say to me, I just spent 10 hours on Zoom calls working. I know you want me to come out and hang out with the family. I need 20 minutes to just zone out of my office before I'm ready to do that. So we found ways to communicate what we need to each other in a way that doesn't trigger us, okay? So as you all reflect on your situations, again, if you are living with folks, how might you find a shared language to talk about, this is what I'm needing right now to regulate myself, or this is what I think I need, but I actually don't think it's gonna be so helpful. And so we can start to support each other around that. I also, you know, I take responsibility for my onness. You know, I tell the kids sometimes, I'm like, mean mommy's coming out. I need 45 minutes to work out. And you know what? If I need to just put them in front of video games, which I hate doing, but I'm like, you know what? If that's what I need sometimes to go regulate myself, I'm going to do that. Without this awareness, I might not give myself permission. I might, because I'm trying to be strict about video games in my household because I don't think they're great for my kids, I might not do the things I need to regulate because I want to control what I think they need. So I've learned I have to prioritize my self-regulation, even if it means compromising on some of the other stuff. Does that make sense? These questions are helpful. And I also want to focus on the off people. I know as an on person, I have more insight on people. But for off people, your work is going to be to find slow, titrated ways to move the energy. So, you know, don't decide you should clean the whole house tomorrow, right? Don't go from like laying in bed all day to cleaning the whole house. Pick small, manageable tasks. And then when you are needing to just retreat into your own bubble, do it consciously, right? Don't do it like you're beating yourself up. Decide, I'm going to go lay in bed right now and really let myself go for 20, 30 minutes. What if you did that deliberately versus be in bed, be guilty about being in bed, be telling yourself a story about all the things you should be doing, right? We live in a culture that validates on people. It validates people who do. And off people, you often feel unseen, marginalized, or pathologized, right? So give yourself permission. And I bet you that if you decided to just get into bed and totally shut down consciously, you might find that as you let go, let go, let go, sometimes the energy starts to come back up. And it won't be a lot. It might be, all right, now I'm going to get up and take a walk around the block, or I'm going to get up and organize one drawer. Create small, manageable tasks, just like us on people are trying to create small, manageable ways to slow down and be still. Off people will create slow and manageable ways to move the energy. So we have to begin where we are, not where we think we should be or where society tells us we should be. It's not useful. It just creates shame. And when we feel ashamed for where we are, we stop the flow of our healing. Let's see, there's other questions. Yeah, I've got other micromanagers on the call. Yes. somebody's saying their partner is in another country and feels hopeless. Yeah, that's really, really tough, right? So many different circumstances that people are in. Any other questions about this on-off thing coming up for you? Other strategies, especially for off people, is if you can, get outside. Go lay in the sun and be off. If you have sun where you are, right? Or go get some fresh air. And I know again, some folks might not be able to have access to nature. I mean, just literally open a window, stare at a house plant, right? Nature is everywhere. So if you can just go put your body into a slightly different environment where there is some fresh air or some sun, that can be really useful. And again, I'm going to spend the last bit of this webinar doing some physical practices that you can do as well, okay? The other thing I wanted to say, somebody here is saying that it feels like this time in isolation feels endless. Here's the other thing is, it's called chunking. So one thing that, one way that I stay out of overwhelm and this is actually a practice that we teach is trying to put things into manageable chunks. So for me, I've been thinking about this quarantine 2 weeks at a time. I feel like I can handle 2 weeks. I can't think beyond that. And even though I know now we probably have 5 more weeks of quarantine, I'm not even thinking about 5 weeks, 2 weeks at a time. What is your manageable chunk? Is it 1 week? Is it 1 day? You've got to put things into those chunks because what happens if we don't is we get overwhelmed, right? I remember doing this when I was pregnant. Like I was like, I can take it one trimester at a time. And I remember I had a friend who was pregnant the same time I was, and in the first trimester, she was thinking about diapers. I was like, no. I will think about diapers 2 weeks before I give birth. And I realized that I was naturally creating chunks that I could manage. Otherwise, I would get overwhelmed. And it was interesting being pregnant with a friend who tended to get herself into overwhelm. Like, you know, her second trimester, she was thinking about how she was going to raise the kid. I was like, I'm just figuring out how I'm going to get the kid out of my body. I can't think about that stuff yet. So if you tend to get overwhelmed by chunking things in too big of chunks, can you chunk them smaller? And again, that's not always possible. Some of us are in circumstances where we have to think about things at a certain distance. But can you, what are your manageable chunks? Some days it's like hour by hour, and that's okay. All right. The other question is, how do I find the balance of turning on and off? That's really going to be a question for you, right? Of tracking how much time do you need to shut down every day if you can? And maybe take an inventory and start to notice your rhythm. So like for me, I know that there's some mornings I wake up and my heart is already racing. Those are mornings where I'm like, I have to exercise in the morning. Otherwise, all day, my anxiety is just going to be spiking. And it's tough because, you know, my work days are so short because of my kids being in school, but I know that I have to do that. And I've gotten creative. I've started doing Just Dance with my 9-year-old. So this way I'm taking care of him. He's getting exercise and I'm moving. So I want you to just take an inventory of like what works in my nervous system and what doesn't. Also, we're going to talk about media. And maybe I'll do that. Let's do that right now. So how many of you on the call can feel a relationship between your anxiety and your consumption of news and media? Just give me a yes or a thumbs up or a hands up. This is a big one for folks. This is a big one. So I want you to think about media hygiene. What are some of the things that you do that work and that don't work? So here's the things I want to suggest. We need to be informed, absolutely, right? So these are the things that are general best practices, but notice for you what works. You're not doing news first thing in the morning, right? You don't want to wake up and go right to the headlines. Even if it's 10 minutes, 20 minutes, you've got to wait a little bit. You don't want to do the news before bed. You know, sleep is sacred time. So think about, like for me, once a day I do the news. And can I tell you how I get my news now? Trevor Noah and John Oliver. And I find that their delivery, they give me the summary, but they also give me the good news and they make it kind of funny. And so I was noticing that when I go to CNN, everything is like bolded and black and meh, you know, and it's just the bad stuff. And actually that's not accurate, just the bad stuff. So I've actually been going, there's an Instagram channel called Info Beautiful, and they put everything into graphs. And for me, that really helps, is to look at the perspective. And it's not about minimizing the bad stuff, but placing it in perspective. You know, what's happening now is awful. And there's awful things happening all the time. We're just not being told about it, right? Do you know how many people a day die of tuberculosis? 3,000. 3,000 people a day die of tuberculosis. Right now with COVID-19, we're at about 200 a day. So again, not to minimize the difficulty, but to say there's a lot of tough stuff that's been happening. So for me, that really helps is to see graphs, to look at the curves, to look at the impact of social distancing, to be able to hold how terrible this is within the larger context is really helpful. And think about how you're getting your news. And I would say once a day, you get it, you do a news dump. Once a day. Don't let it be scattered. That also means you're turning off phone alerts. all the alerts are bad. How many times do you get an alert being like, another person survived today? This person is doing great today. The alerts are bad. I also think that there's a way that the news needs to be delivered in a way that increases our anxiety, because that is a way to get folks to do what we need to do, which is shelter in place and physical distance. But my hope is that we can all do what we need while holding the possibility and holding the hope at the same time. We've gotten to a practice in our household of asking permission before we talk about coronavirus. So I'm not going to just all of a sudden have my husband come and tell me about an article he just read, or I have a friend who's in quarantine with us. Same thing. We're trying to respect that when we want to talk about it. Look for the good news. Don't just look for the bad news. And there's good news stations. Read the stories about the folks that are doing well. Read about the helpers. Read about the essential workers, the ways that people are banding together. And the last one that I think is really important, I've been calling humanize the headlines. So even the bad news, even the news of people dying, people not getting the care they need, those are delivered to us in a way that don't talk about the human experience. And so a lot of those folks that are experiencing death and negative stuff, they're also having, there's more to it than that. So, for example, I lost my mom this year. My mom had pancreatic cancer. She got diagnosed in July and she passed away on February 9th. And, if you were to just hear that as a headline, right? My mom got cancer. 8 months later, she died. That sounds terrible, right? It was terrible. And we had beautiful moments of laughter. We had moments of learning. That experience was a full experience, a full human experience that was difficult. And we did okay on the other side. Now, I don't mean to say that everybody has that. There's a lot of awful stuff happening that doesn't have a silver lining, or people haven't had those beautiful moments. But the way the news is delivered is it doesn't show us the humanity of the folks that went through what they went through. So these are some of my thoughts about media hygiene. If you have others that work for you or questions about these, maybe type them into the chat or the Q&A. But be disciplined about how you consume your media, just like how we're being disciplined about washing our hands and we're being disciplined about the other things. It should not be 24/7. That is not healthy. Okay, so I hope that this is helpful. Another Trevor Noah fan. I really do find that some of these late night show hosts, they do give, I'll compare the information they're giving me and I'll be like, yep, that's what I read on CNN today, but this person delivered it in a way that allowed me to hear the seriousness of it, and still be regulated around it, okay? Yeah, putting the phone away during all meals and cooking, yeah. And, especially now that so much of our life is online, really taking times to be offline is really important. All right, so notice how you're doing right now. I'm going to pause, check your body, see if you're taking away some stuff that's useful. And I want to come back and spend our last bit of time back on the somatic practices. And again, all of this is somatic. All of this is about checking in with how does my body respond, right? Because, for me, the way that I experience it and the way I see it is our body will have an experience and then our mind will attach a story to it, right? So I might wake up with my heart racing and then my mind starts to go, oh my God, what if this happens? And what if that happens? And the thing is that when we're dysregulated, when we're in that like fight flight state, our thoughts and our imagination becomes very binary. So like when I'm anxious, it's either everything's going to be okay or everyone's going to die. Like there isn't this gray zone. There's no in between. When we are dysregulated, there's no nuance to our thinking or to our feeling. And so when we can get regulated, we can start to feel more of that nuance. Like for example, For me, I think about all the difficult things that could happen that I actually could handle and get through. Like, I can handle quite a lot. I could handle, you know, getting seriously sick and then recovering from it. Like, there's so much bad stuff we actually could handle. And I don't know if this is useful for you, but for me, it's really useful, because if I have to believe that nothing bad is going to happen, that's like a lot. And that's probably unrealistic. But the other choice doesn't have to be that everything bad is going to handle. And that, for many of us, not all of us, and I recognize that, but for a lot of us, there's a lot of bad stuff that could happen that we could handle. So if that's true for you, maybe let yourself think about those things, right? And I know it might sound a little odd, but, you know, it's a little comforting for me to imagine, you know, what if my husband got sick, and my husband has pre-existing conditions, and so he's high risk, right? But I imagine, okay, what if he got really sick, but then what if he got through it? Like, chances are he could get through it, right? Or thinking about economics, you know what, if we ended up having to, like, you know, sell our home, like, that would all be really hard, but you know what, we could probably get through that. People are amazing. They get through the unimaginable. I mean, even folks that don't have resources manage. So again, I don't want to bypass the bad. I want to hold the hope with the grief and the fear and the pain. Part of being self-regulated is being able to hold complexity, right? The complexity of, I'm really scared and I think I'll be okay, right? Or the complexity of, I feel shut down and depressed and grounded and hopeful. So just for a moment, see if you can feel into that possibility. You know, I don't think you'll leave this workshop just feeling amazing, right? That would be bullshit, right? But my hope is that you can leave this workshop going, all right, I can be with what's difficult right now. And that if that's the goal, that's A, more realistic, and that's what resilience is. So resilience is not about feeling good all the time. Resilience is about being able to handle the difficulty, being able to having a sense that you could get through what's hard. Let me give you my resilience slide, right? So resilience, our ability to recover from adversity, to bounce back, although I don't know about bouncing back, right? You know, this virus, there's no bouncing back. Our world is going to be transformed by this. And to me, that's how I think about trauma, that when we can let ourselves be transformed by trauma, we can heal. But if we're gripping against it, we don't want to accept it, or we want to go back to how we were, that can create more suffering. Bessel van der Kolk, who's a trauma researcher, defines trauma as a loss of imagination. That when we are trapped in our trauma, we can't see our way out. We can't imagine things being different than how they are, and we stay stuck. And part of healing, part of recovering from these traumatic, overwhelming events is being able to imagine something different, something better. And also being able to make meaning out of it. Now, I'm not a big fan of just saying, well, this is happening for a reason and we manifested this, but I am a big fan of trying to make meaning of what's already happening. I do think that coronavirus can transform our society for the better if we try to make that what happens, right? And so what might it be for you to make meaning out of this circumstance for yourself, to somehow turn it into something that allows you to be stronger, more compassionate, softer, kinder. And again, I want to balance that. I don't want you to leave this with pressure that I'm supposed to turn this into something positive. But making meaning out of difficulty is one way that we can heal from difficult experiences. And I want to distinguish this from spiritual bypass. So spiritual bypass is when we make meaning out of something so we don't have to feel our grief, so we don't have to feel the pain. Feel the grief, feel the pain, feel what's going on, and can you create space for some meaning to emerge? Resilience is also about having a feeling that we can handle what's coming. So that's also what I referred to before, okay? That feeling into your strength, the strength of your ancestors, the strength of the folks before you, the strength of our community. I'm gonna pause and see some questions here, and then we're gonna go into a short practice. Oh, but I have one more cuteness thing. Baby Yoda. I love Baby Yoda. See if this is a cute one for you. And check your body. And just again, if there's any questions or thoughts about this, that holding the grief while making meaning, holding the complexity. There's an interesting theory in thermodynamics called complexity theory, and it talks about how a simple system is very unstable, and that complexity allows systems to be more stable. So if you think about a table with three legs, for example, is a really simple system. If one leg breaks, the whole thing falls apart. But a table with 20 legs is a more complex system. It can have a broken leg and a loose leg and a nicked leg and still be stable. So as we develop that complexity in ourselves, we can hold the grief, the fear, the possibility, the hope, all of it at once in a way that allows us to be more whole rather than in a way that fragments us. So check in for yourself. What are you being asked to hold in this moment? What type of complicated feelings or situations are you being asked to hold? Just notice that. And as we move into the practice together, I'm gonna invite you to hold that. So if there's no questions, we're gonna do a 10-minute short practice and then leave a few minutes at the end for more Q&A or reflection, where we could just stare at Baby Yoda. All right, and so to move into the practice, I'm not seeing questions. If you wanted to lay down, you could. It can be nice after all this sitting. And you don't need to be able to see me because I'm going to give you verbal instructions. And so I'm going to invite you to either lay down on your back. And the complexity theory is called complexity theory. That's the name of the theory. You can Google it. So if you have space and want to lay down on your back and that feels good for your nervous system, you can. Otherwise, stay seated or consider leaning back onto something so your back has support, okay? In fact, I'm gonna strongly recommend you find a way to give your back support. And if you are laying down, I'm gonna invite you to have your knees bent and take your feet wide and your knees together so your knees are touching. And some of you can do this if you're leaning on something. And notice if you want your arms alongside your body or on your body. And notice if your eyes want to be open or closed. And just take a moment to feel for all the places in your body being supported right now. Deliberately place your attention on those areas, your back, your feet, the hands on the body. And I want you to look for anything that might be settling or becoming more spacious. So part of shifting out of anxiety is learning to not just look for signs of anxiety, but to also look for the other things that might be happening. And you might, as you are laying here or sitting here, notice places that are tight or places that are being held. Can you have compassion for that as well? Just be with it. But make sure that about half your attention is on whatever might feel grounded or supportive. So can we hold what feels grounding, what might feel good or neutral, while we also feel what might be uncomfortable? If it's hard for you to hold both at the same time, can you go back and forth? Feel what is solid and supportive, and then feel what might feel activated or uncomfortable. So I'm guiding you in a way that is about placing your attention in a particular way. And this is something you can do. You can, you know, throughout your day, notice, oh, my heart is racing. Okay, but do I feel my feet on the floor? Or can I put my hands on my chest? And then from here, I want you to hug your knees into your chest. Again, some of you are seated, some of you are on your backs. And just let your body rock. And notice if this is useful in your body. You know it's useful if you take a spontaneous breath, you settle, or you just kind of like it. You just kind of like it. And again, I want to acknowledge that for some of you, these more subtle techniques work better after you've done a burst of energy, right? After you've like done Just Dance for 20 minutes with your kid, or you've run around the block, or, you know, just done something that really raises your heart rate, then it can drop down. So if while I'm doing this, you're just getting more anxious, you might, when you get the recording of this, try this after doing something that's more physical, okay? So we're gonna take a twist. If you're laying on your back, let your knees drop over to the right and your left arm go to the left. If you're sitting, you can just take a little twist here to your right. And now just take two deep breaths here. And then come back to center and twist in the other direction. Let the knees drop over or take a seated twist. And two deep breaths here. And then come on back to center and we're all gonna come up to sit. We're gonna do one final thing sitting together. So just notice how you're feeling just from that. And so typically when we feel anxious, the energy is going to show up in the neck and the shoulders and the hips, right? It's like a tense energy. Those of you who tend to be off people, it might not feel like tension. It might feel like lack of sensation. Okay. So now we're going to take a side stretch. Bring your left hand to the floor or to a pillow or a block and just take your right arm up. And we're gonna take a little side stretch here. Just getting into the side body a little bit. So like not too big of a deal here, but I want you to really root down through your sitting bones and just give a little energy to your lower belly and just take a side stretch. Good, one more breath. And then come on up and go over to the other side, right hand to the floor or block, left arm up, root down. So sometimes just the ribs get really tight and our breathing muscles get really tight. We need to open them up a little bit. One more breath. And then come on up. Roll your shoulders a couple of times. Make some funny faces. Give it a sound. So just notice these few movements, how they feel for you. So we're gonna go back and do our arm squeezes here, offering a little bit of containment. If you didn't like this when I first did it, feel free to skip it. And if there's a particular point in the movement where your body really settles, hang out there for a moment. And then another one we're gonna do is called tapping. You're gonna take your hands and just tap on the crown of the head 4, 5, 6 times. Go over to your temples and tap. Go to the forehead and tap. Underneath your eyes, sinuses. Take one hand and tap under the nose. Other hand taps under the chin. Hands to the center of your chest. Thumbs to your side body. And then fists gently tapping up and down the legs, just up and down the legs. Notice what this is like for you. This can be a good one for you off folks, where you might, if you feel like you're not really feeling your body, this just gently gets you into your body. You can do the bottoms of your feet as well. And then just pause a moment here. Notice what your breathing is like. And now we're gonna work deliberately with the breath. Okay, so place your hands on your lower ribs. We wanna try to get out of upper body breathing because that can be stressful, and get into the diaphragm. Again, remember, if your anxiety is such that trying to breathe deeply provokes your anxiety, don't do deep breathing work. Just let the breath be how it is and do grounding work instead, okay? Otherwise, and for a lot of people, breathing is useful. Start to breathe and try to imagine filling the lower lungs with breath. Maybe your fingers separate as you inhale and they go back towards each other as you exhale. So diaphragmatic breathing can stimulate a parasympathetic rest response in the nervous system. As you notice, breathing I do as the last tool because some of the other tools make us breathe spontaneously. And that's a little more powerful when the body is spontaneously taking a breath. But sometimes we have to deliberately breathe deeply to invoke that response. So breathing through the nose, trying to find a rhythm that feels good for you. And you might imagine the breath moving up and down the body. So inhaling up the spine and exhaling back down. Try to stay really grounded. So feel your weight on the earth. We don't want to just leave the body when we're doing breath work. And if you tend to be an off person, that could happen. Sometimes keeping your eyes open and a little bit in the space can help. Just a few more deep breaths here. If this works for you, take note. You can always pause and take some breaths to regulate your nervous system. So our last couple of minutes, we're going to do a slightly different embodied meditation. So you'll find a comfortable position. If you want to lean on something, you can. For this one, though, if sitting up without leaning works for you, I'm going to recommend it. Notice if your eyes want to be open or closed. And so the first thing I want you to do is bring your attention to your sense of grounding if you found it. If you haven't found grounding, if that's not available to you, you're going to try to keep your eyes open and find something in the room that is pleasant or supportive. Or you're gonna work with your breath deliberately, okay? But if you have access to grounding, we're gonna work with that. So feeling your butt on the floor or your hands on your body, you could put your hands wherever you want. Try to focus on something that feels solid, supportive. Maybe the word is calm, maybe the word is neutral. Something that is a resource, something that supports you. Again, it might be just your hands on your body. You know you have found grounding if you settle a little bit when you focus on that thing, okay? So now, keeping half your attention on your grounding, I want you to bring the rest of your attention to the rest of your body and simply scan your sensations. Just notice what else you feel. And each time you feel something, so for example, you might notice a tight chest. Okay, while you feel your legs, notice your chest. And then ask yourself, and what happens next? Does the sensation get stronger, weaker? Does it move? So don't get stuck on the sensation. Just notice what happens next. And then you might notice something else, go to it, and ask yourself, and what happens next? We're simply loosely scanning sensations with half of our attention on our grounding. You might at some point notice some tingling or temperature change to the body. That can be a release of stress energy. You might also notice that the upper body wants to move a little bit. If you feel the impulse to move, sometimes what happens with this exercise is a natural unwinding. And so if you feel that natural impulse to move, do it slowly, like so slowly that if somebody were looking at you, they wouldn't be sure if you were moving or not. Okay, I'm going to try to be quiet for 1 minute, and you're going to be grounding, tracking your sensations and what happens next, and allowing any subtle movement to occur. And you might observe breathing patterns changing. If you notice emotions come up, ask yourself, how does this feel as a sensation in my body? And do the same thing with the emotions. And so when you're ready, begin to deepen your breath if you weren't working with the breath deliberately. If your eyes were closed, open them and just look around the room. And now I want you to check in and notice, what are your three words now? How are you feeling now? You can journal write them. You can write them into the chat. What are your three words now? How do you feel now? Notice if it feels different. What else is with you? So I'm seeing open, relaxed, free, calm, quiet, clearer. Great. And so you can keep typing those in if you want to share. And just want to open up the last 5 minutes to see if there's any other questions or comments or gems that you're taking with you. So if you want to jot down in your journal, like, what's one thing that you want to take with you right now, just so you remember it. So you can type that into the chat. You can type your three words or a gem you're taking with you, or a question. Calm, relaxed, and capable. These are different words from before, right? And my hope is that you can use these tools throughout your whole day. You don't have to stop and do 90-minute webinar. That you can pause and do the arm squeezes, or you can take a breath, and that you can find the tools that work for you so that your nervous system is not getting overloaded throughout your days. So if there's any gems you're taking, you want to type in or write in your journal. All right, so I want to thank you all for joining me. I hope that this was helpful. I'm going to be continuing to roll out information to offer support during this time. So stay in touch with me in any way that you want. And be well. I'm going to hang and look at this chat a little bit. I think things are coming out in a delay. So one gem is having better options to release my on energy rather than yelling and exploding. Absolutely. Right. We don't want to let the energy out on other people. We want to find ways to release it. That doesn't harm anybody else or it doesn't harm ourselves. All right, everybody. I want to thank you all for joining me. And I hope that you're well and that this was useful. Take care.